It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the Newark, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at mybradio.com, mybradio.com, and on the 77 WABC app. Thank you again, New York, for the great Nielsen ratings that you afford us. And of course, we realize that's a testament to the great guests that we attract for the show. And this week's going to be no different. As you know, we cover so many different professions and categories in the business world: sales, social media, corporate culture, leadership, strategic planning, communication, marketing and advertising, and of course so much more. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where you'll gain solid advice to get you ahead in today's business world. Well, as we do each week, we open with some thank yous. Of course, we all know how important that is. I want to thank the entire team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group who plays such an important support role. Cirilli, Eliana, Hoodie, Miriam, Dina, thank you. And to the great folks at 77 WABC, James, Matt, Chris, Lexi, Justin, thank you. And I'd also like to give a special shout-out to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on: the Mishpocha Magazine Take 5 column, C-Suite Radio, C-Suite TV, Audio Boom, Player.fm, iTunes, YouTube. All past episodes are available by going to mybradio.com, mybradio.com. That's where you can pick up the interview I had with Shep Hyken, the world-renowned customer service expert, Joe Hart, president and CEO of Dale Carnegie, Dr. Adrian Boise, the chief experience officer at the Cleveland Clinic, Captain Sully Sullenberger, Miracle on the Hudson, and so many other fantastic guests. They're all available by going to mybradio.com. That's mybradio.com. And by the way, many of the guests are also videoed, as tonight's show is going to be videoed. So they're up on the YouTube channel. If you want to go through YouTube, just type in Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, and right away you'll see roughly 50 episodes with fantastic concepts. Going to tonight's guest, a very, very special treat. I hunted him down to get him on the air. Menachem Lubinsky, he is the president and CEO of Lubicon Marketing Consulting. He's been doing marketing and consulting for many decades. He is the father of the kosher food industry as we know it today. I think that's a very fair accolade. Menachem, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
It is absolutely my pleasure.
Very special. Well, we have a lot to cover, and we have only an hour. Let's jump in just by telling us about yourself. You started Lubicon, what, in 84?
84.
Tell us about the journey, starting it. What was, how did it all come about?
Well, we're talking about a time which was a completely different world from today. We didn't have the digital marketing as we did today, and the world was different, the business world was different, but some concepts remained constant throughout the decades. For example, I like to tell people that the same content marketing that I did back in 84 on typewriters and on press releases and on whatever.
Rubolith.
Exactly. It's coming back now. The whole social media is content-driven, the blogs and all the websites and everything else. So it's taken on different formats, but the bottom line is what has remained constant is the person's mind, because that's what you're really dealing with. You're dealing with talking to and influencing a person's mind. And that's what marketing is all about. I mean, people ask me a lot of times, they say, what's the quickest way to define marketing? And I always say it is the process from the raw material to the end user. Anything in between is marketing. It's getting it there. And people don't even realize when they're being marketed to.
Great point. So yeah. It's not, even though there's new technology and there's new vehicles to get the information across, but education-based marketing, content marketing, whatever you call it, at the end of the day, it's all about communicating the product, the service, whatever the company is representing, into the end user's brain.
Exactly. The Model T Ford worked on four wheels on an engine, and it eventually got you to where you needed to go.
Right.
And what marketing today, the modern technology, is doing exactly the same thing. It's doing bringing you from the point of where you want to influence the person's mind to listen to you. Right. And God knows today we are so inundated with messages, which is good news and bad news. The good news is that intelligent people can sort out the information. The bad news is that people that have no patience and are not so intelligent lose this somewhere in the shuffle. And that's part of the problem of what we have, what I call the mind clutter. Yeah. We used to have paper clutter. Now we have mind clutter.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
With the experience that you have in the world of marketing, what would you say are some of the most important ingredients to a successful marketing campaign?
I think right off the bat, people have to accept marketing as not being a burden, but an opportunity. And the minute that you kind of graduate from the point where you don't look at it as a burden, but you look at it as something that you can grow a business. And, you know, we're all impatient. And one of the main problems is that people are impatient. And they want results, instant results. And that's not what marketing is all about. Because look at yourself. I mean, you grew up from being an infant to a toddler. You didn't immediately, upon leaving your mother's womb, immediately go into a marathon race. There was a process. And so marketing is a process, and if you don't have the patience, you're no different than the person that says, well, why is my toddler at age one not speaking and not speaking English well? Because there's a process, because there's a mind, and the mind takes time till it sorts, until it filters. It's a very complex process that only God knew how to do and to prepare it. So that's what marketing is. Marketing takes time, and if people have the wherewithal, now the main issue is for people is capital. Right. Because not that they don't understand that marketing takes patience. They just don't understand how to be able to fund that patience. And you know what? I know people today that the minute a baby is born, they put away money for college. And people need to do that with marketing as well. When they start a business, they need to factor in not only the phone system, not only the electricity, not only the rent, but also how am I getting my message out? I mean, I could have the biggest and the nicest product out on the marketplace, but if it sits, you know, let's put it this way. Marketing has two steps to it. One is getting it on the shelf. Two is getting it off the shelf.
It's a great way of putting it.
Yeah.
Is there a rule of thumb that you recommend for businesses to set aside a budget for marketing? Again, as you're describing, it's not a luxury, folks. Marketing is a necessity. What percentage, and does it make a difference if it's B2C or B2B?
Yeah, so the big problem is what is the universe? In other words, if you are setting a budget for a national product that's going to have a national target, that's one thing. But, you know, many people want to go very big from the beginning and therefore drain the resources right at the outset without patience again. I mean, they could do it in a very small market, see how it goes, learn from the experience, evaluate it. And how do you evaluate? You see where you were before you did the marketing, see where you are after the marketing. If you go up 1%, you're doing well. I mean, that means there is a needle that's moving. And the other problem I think that I find, at least found over the years, is the product itself. I mean, talking yourself into and putting yourself into a frenzy that you have absolutely the best product when you don't is throwing bad money after bad money. Because the first thing that people look at, and it doesn't matter whether they're kosher, they're not kosher, whatever the sense is, what is the product? Because when I taught in Baruch, I explained that the marketing has one basic theory. It's called the benefit theory. Why is this good for me? And not why it's good for the agency, and not why it's good for the ego of whoever the manufacturer is. Why is it good for the end user? How is his life going to be better by using that product? And if you can't answer that question, you have a problem.
Mm. So is there any type of rule of thumb in terms of percentage, 10%, 15%, 5%?
I think if anybody does, it's a mistake. Because the bottom line is that there has to be something allocated to it that moves the needle from one to the next. I mean, if it may not take as much money as you think. Okay. And sometimes, you know, marketing has nothing to do with money. It has to do with the person sitting up front and how they say good morning and hello.
Right. Right,
so whatever it takes for you to get the message across to whoever your customer is what marketing is about. And thinking automatically that I need money for this is wrong. I mean, I've walked into businesses and I've told them things that they didn't even realize. For example, when you look at something like a logo, which you know very well, you walk into the hall and it has one color on one wall. Then you go into another wall, there's an older logo there with another color. You know, that's like putting on a different face when you get up in the morning, every morning. So there are things that people can do, and especially startups who have a hard time raising capital, just put yourself together. You know, don't mix the colors. Dress exactly as you want. And people are basically, when you think people are not paying attention, they are. But you know why? Because we have five senses. Right. We smell, we watch, we look, we hear. I mean, those five senses have to be appealed to. Then you could talk about expanding, but the first thing is do it right.
Now, before you touched on it, the importance that the product follows through on whatever promises are made in the marketing campaign. Are there any examples that come to mind of, let's say a great campaign that was out there for a product, and then it turned out that the product itself was a flop, and therefore it crashed and burned, and then meanwhile they're turning to the agency, and meanwhile it was the product that was...
Well, you know, we are programmed, and I'm going to put it in a different light. We are programmed to plan for failure. What happens if I fail? And we have contingency plans. But very few people plan for success. And what happens if too many people come to the party? Do I have enough chairs? Did I prepare enough food?
Right.
There was once a hospital that had a number for calling for physician referrals. And they had planned for a certain number of calls to come in every day, which obviously would then be transmitted to the physicians and mm-hmm. the business. The only problem is the volume was five times as much as they planned. And they
a healthy problem.
Put in $1 million in investment into the program, and the program died from success, not from failure. So, you know, that's why it's... You know, a lot of people believe that they know how to market themselves. But you know what the difference is? The difference with having a professional is the professional does think about success.
Right.
And the private person thinks more or less on failure. Because when we go to sleep, we kind of have a plan B of everything. You know, if this doesn't work out, if we can't make the road, there'll be too much traffic, we know another road, alternate road. You know, the GPS today... for a car has to be a GPS for a person too, in the sense that we have to know here's a key word. We have to be strategic. We have to be able to say, what do we want to see at the end of the tunnel? Where do we want to go? What's our plan? We can't just go along and say, you know what, we're going to go blindly and whatever happens, happens. That is not a strategy. That's a failure.
My guest this evening is none other than Menachem Lubinsky, President and CEO of Lubicom. By the way, more information, lubicom.com.
Lubicom.com.
Lubicom.com. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great, so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Okay, so you're considering a comprehensive medical exam, but you haven't decided where. At Elytra Health in New York City, we know you have a tight schedule and that you only want the best. We also know you have choices to consider. Well, Consider that you could have a world-class executive longevity exam at Alitra's state-of-the-art Manhattan Center for Life and Longevity, right in downtown New York City. Think about the fact that the experts at Alitra Health are a hand-selected staff with more than 30 years of experience in executive exams and concierge medicine, and that top doctors in the area refer their patients to Alitra. Something else to weigh is that cardiac imaging, cancer screening, labs, and all other testing is completed in a single five-hour visit with white glove service. Plus, you'll receive the results, advice, and follow-up coordination before you leave. Finally, consider how easy it is to get peace of mind from an Alitra exam now by visiting alitrahealth.com. That's E-L-I-T-R-A health.com. Alitra Health. Well, above all.
Is your business owed money? Are you frustrated with trying to recover past due funds and worried you may not get paid? At Ginny Debt Collection, we know dealing with debt collection can be a stressful endeavor. That's why we're here to ease your collection headaches and maximize returns. With more than 15 years serving clients nationwide, Ginny Debt Collection's comprehensive hands-on services help your business efficiently recover past due funds, improve cash flow, and develop strong customer relationships. Call us at 917-400-3253. Gain peace of mind knowing experienced collection professionals are helping you get your money back into your account in the shortest amount of time. Call 917-400-3253 for a free consultation. 917-400-3253 or visit GinniDebtCollection.com. That's G-I-N-I DebtCollection.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yisroel Saftless right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening, someone that I wanted on for a very long time, Menachem Lubinsky, President and CEO of Lubicom. Thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
My great pleasure.
Thank you. This is a treat. Well, we're going to jump in now to the power of the business opportunities within the Orthodox Jewish demographic. And you're probably the... It's fair to say you are the go-to person for this. You have a tremendous amount of experience. You've serviced national brands, all types of brands. So let's talk about the numbers and the opportunities within the Orthodox Jewish demographic. Let's start by talking about even the Orthodox Jewish population, let's say nationwide, in North America, worldwide, just so that people understand that dynamic.
Well, the Orthodox community has been the fastest growing segment in the Jewish community. The Pew study points that out very clearly. The Federation study back in 2010 also pointed out the same thing. So, and we know it from just watching the growth of communities. Take a community like Lakewood, which has grown from about 20,000 to 70,000 and continues to grow. But what is important to understand here is that two things. Number one, the Orthodox community now has its own commerce. So there is a tremendous amount of opportunity within that community. We estimate that there are about 900,000 to a million bodies, so to speak, in the Orthodox Jewish community. That's an awful lot of people.
In the U.S.
In the U.S. That's an awful lot of people, and that's an awfully big market. And it's a very sophisticated market. It's a market that spends, that it's a market that is very educated. It's a market that discerns the difference in quality. It's a market also that likes to be challenged. New products, innovation. They're very much as they look different in some ways, they have their feet very much on the ground, and sometimes much more than people that are in the common culture.
Fascinating.
So I think that when we market to them, we have to put that in perspective. I mean, underestimating the intelligence, for example, has been a mistake that many marketers make. For example, and it's one of the reasons that I have a tremendous respect for you, because there's many people that come into the marketing field. They have a certain talent. They could be a graphic artist. But there are very few people that take that talent and look at it from a strategic point of view. And that's why you're so different, and you're in a different class when it comes to that. And why is that important? Because you're serving your client much, much better if you have that strategic background rather than, you know, there are many people that can paint Picassos, but that doesn't necessarily make it good marketing.
Right.
If you, for example, the studies have shown consistently that if you tell a consumer how to use a product, the percentage of sales goes up. So, you know, so just don't slap the product, put it on the shelf and put a word incredible on the ad and hope that that's going to do the trick. It doesn't, you know, because, again, the benefit theory. What's in it for me? So talking about the Orthodox community, they're very sophisticated. They're growing numbers. We've been watching in the kosher food industry, where the food industry in general has been growing at about 2%, 2.5% a year. The kosher market's been growing at 12 to 15% a year.
That much of an extreme difference.
Absolutely. And if you look at the last 11, 12 years, the Orthodox community has developed a network of huge independent kosher supermarkets.
Right.
That in every sense of the word look like and compete with the general supermarkets that everybody's used to. But what that does is it's kind of created a huge opportunity, because since it's all kosher, there's more shelf space for a diversity of products. So I can have six different brands of mayonnaise, while, let's say, a ShopRite doesn't have the room for that. So there's been an enormous evolution in that market. When you talk about the kosher food market coming out with 500 to 600 new products a year. You know, when I started Kosher Fest 30 years ago, which is the kosher food trade show, and I started it with 69 booths and 600 visitors 30 years ago, and now this year we'll have 7,000 people from 21 countries and 400 booths. When I started it, we could only identify, by talking to distributors, about 16,000 products. Today, there are over 300,000 products that are kosher certified.
300,000.
Now, understand one thing. The internationalization of kosher. What do I mean by that? Kosher today is available in about 100 countries. Why? Because if you're in Africa, or if you're in a hamlet somewhere, and you want to produce a product to export to the United States, who are you going to sell to? Coca-Cola won't buy it. They're kosher. Right. Kellogg's won't buy it. Danone won't buy it. Virtually most of the products today are kosher certified. So you better be kosher if you want to sell to the United States. And that has created, I think it's the biggest news of talk about the Orthodox community, next to the bagel. Why do I say the bagel? Because, amazingly, the bagel is the only Jewish food which has its origin in Eastern Europe, maintained the Yiddish word bagel, which means round. And in Osaka, Japan, and wherever you go around the world, they use that word bagel.
Bagel.
It doesn't make a difference where you are. It's the kind of the biggest success story of a Jewish product. So it's, have we made headway? We've made enormous headway in every sense of the word. Now, what is really tipped the scales in many, many ways is that the kosher market is producing products that are far superior in many respects to other products. So therefore, when you put a kosher product on a shelf that says kosher in the aisle, many non-kosher consumers are noticing. The packaging is beautiful. They taste it. The quality is great. We know that, for example, before Passover, before Pesach, in large numbers of people buy matzah.
Right.
They look at it as a cracker, which is a white cracker, and it's dietetic. I can't tell you how many people go to the depot at Pepsi Cola before Passover or Coca-Cola, because the only time of the year that they use real sugar, and people want to use real sugar. So the effect of what the kosher market has had on the society as a whole
means far beyond the Orthodox Jewish demographic.
Beyond. Now, just take it from this point of view. Almost every consumer, no matter what ethnic background they come from, know the word kosher. Why? They use it in the daily lexicon. They talk about people. They say, he's not kosher. It's a word that everyone recognizes and everyone knows. So when you talk about a symbol, for example, the OU, which is the Orthodox Union, which is the largest symbol in the world, has more of its symbol on product than the Boeing company does. That's how big it is. So have we accomplished something? Of course we have. But that's just the food industry. There's every segment of the Orthodox Jewish community has grown. Fashion, banking, insurance, all kinds of services, regardless of whatever the service is. It's a thriving, growing community. The opportunities are tremendous, but you can't take this community for granted. And you can't slap on a Yiddish word and say, I'm going to reach that community. They're too sophisticated for that.
The kosher food industry today, even worldwide, is how much in billions, I imagine, worldwide?
Well, according to all the studies, in the United States alone, it's about a $12.5 billion industry. If you take Israel, which is the largest industry, it's about a $18 to $19 billion industry
alone. Alone.
Israel,
right,
no, because Israel still today, no matter what you read, is still 70% of the population eats kosher. I mean, you can't put a product into a supermarket in Israel without having kosher certification. So, irrespective of where it comes from around the world, the chief rabbinate in Israel has to review the product and will put its stamp on it. So it's an enormous, tremendous market. For some Americans, it's even more complex than the American market because they come there, they have no idea what the kosher certifications are.
Right.
While they got used to the idea here in America of who's who, they have a hard time knowing who's on first in Israel.
Coming back to something you touched on before, the other industries that could benefit. Travel, furniture, fashion. Perhaps you can elaborate on that. Explain the question a little bit more. We understand the numbers of the Orthodox Jewish demographic are, let's say, roughly 900,000 to a million. That represents only 0.003 of the American
Jewish population.
Of the total number of America. So therefore, to a major Fortune 500 company, they might seem like, okay, that's a blip. But at the same time, you take a company that manufactures minivans, and we know that our community, because of the high birth rate, has a large, certainly most households have a minivan because of the birth rate. So therefore, I'm just using that as an example. Perhaps you can elaborate on industries that can benefit by speaking to the Orthodox Jewish demographic.
Well, let's take a look at some numbers. I mean, the average American family is about 3.2. The average Jewish family in America is about 4.2. The average Orthodox family is about 5.2. 10, 15 children, commonplace in many different communities. Talk about an appliance, right? Most people buy one refrigerator. An Orthodox family might have as many as three or four refrigerators.
Right, the Pesach, the upstairs.
They might have
and
a Passover, upstairs, downstairs, large numbers of family members, and requires a lot of refrigeration.
Right.
So the number and the demographics does not represent the consumer power. The consumer power is far, far higher. Jews travel almost 3 to 1 more than the average population.
Wow.
Okay.
They
spend their disposable income is much more percentage-wise than the average American. So you can't look at the numbers necessarily. You're talking about a very dynamic customer, a customer who buys multiple, as you said minivans, but it's not only minivans, it's in every single category. You talk about fashion. When you have to clothe 10 or 12 children, there's a lot of clothes that you're buying. And not only that, I mean, one of the things that people really don't understand is the dynamics of the community makes us much more rich when it comes to, for example, I have friends who are happy when they have one wedding in 3 years. I'd be very happy to have sometimes a wedding a night. I have sometimes three weddings, as you well know. So that reflects in the people selling flowers, the photographers, the caterers. So in every respect, we behave probably not like a million population, but more like a 3-4 million population.
Wow. My guest this evening is none other than Menachem Lubinsky, a real treat. He is the go-to source, for this type of information. That's why we wanted to have him on the show. Of course, he is the president and CEO of Lubicom. You could find out more information by visiting lubicom.com, lubicom.com. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great, so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening is none other than Menachem Lubinsky, President and CEO of Lubicom. Menachem, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
My pleasure.
Well, that previous segment really spelled it out, but we're still going to discuss the buying power, the opportunity in the Jewish demographic. In case you're just tuning in now, no worries. By Tuesday morning, this entire episode will be up at mybradio.com. mybradio.com, and of course that's the resource for all past interviews, and this one no different. Let's talk about Kosher Fest. What year? And I mean that's your brainchild. That's your baby. It's known, and that's what an unbelievable event. Again, last year there were how many exhibitors there?
400.
400 unique exhibitors, and wow. What year did you start Kosher Fest?
Kosher Fest started in 1989, after having been 2 to 3 years as a combined trade and consumer show,
okay,
which had traveled to Chicago, Miami, and Los Angeles.
Okay.
The man who produced the show, Irving Silverman, thought of it as a consumer show, but it didn't work as a consumer show, and I kind of made the whole thing into a trade show, a legitimate trade show. And the fact that in those years, there was no real kosher food industry. Yeah, I mean, there were Coca-Colas, and then there were mom pops.
Right.
There was no coalescence. I mean, some of the very well-known brands were a fraction of what they are today. I mean, you take a company like Kedem Wine,
right.
I mean, which was selling a lot of sacramental wines, but they were absolutely a very, very small fraction of what they are today, importing hundreds of wines from all over the world, in many cases far superior than what's out there in the general market from all over the world. So the leap that companies like that have made, and I'm without mentioning any names, I know companies that have gone from $3 to $4 million in sales back then when they started to well over $150 to $200 million in sales.
Wow.
and continuing to grow. The dynamics of that industry, and I felt all along that you can't build a trade show without building an industry. It's the same way when you market. You know, if you want to market a housing complex or whatever, mm-hmm. you don't really market the housing complex. You market the community. Because that's what people really right. care about. If you ask right. most people, any American, you ask them, what do you look for when you're looking where to live, residence? They'll tell you education. They'll tell you transportation.
Right.
They'll say everything except for the actual living yeah. quarters. So the same was with the kosher food industry. I felt that it was very important to create a at least a perception, but more so the reality of an industry that had coalesced. So I began to gather all kinds of data on the industry, which was very difficult to do.
Right.
Because most people kept the numbers close to the vest.
Right.
But thankfully, there were investment companies that were being pumped into the community that had a lot of data. Every piece of data that came out, I kind of like absorbed it and right. took it in. And then eventually some professional market research companies began to do some research on it. And you talk about Nielsen. Nielsen was doing a tremendous amount. If I wanted to know what kosher is doing, Nielsen is a great source, but not for the average person. Of course, it's a very expensive exercise.
Right.
So building the industry was very important. Looking at the show, I felt the show was a showcase. You know, we always make the show around November time, and the reason we do that is because 40% of the industry takes place around Pesach. It's by far the most lucrative time. You know, when I go speak to a group of supermarket executives and I want to explain to them what the Orthodox market is like, I tell them, think of it this way. We have 52 holidays before we have our first holiday. Right? Why? Because every single week we buy just like a holiday, like you do on Thanksgiving.
Shabbos.
But not only that, we buy cutlery and we buy flowers and we buy cleaning supplies.
That's right.
We have a holiday every week. We start shopping in most cases on Wednesday.
Right.
And for 3 days we're shopping
it's
for.
True.
Okay. And we haven't had our first holiday yet. You know,
true.
And if you look at the general calendar, you'll generally hear people talk about, you know, Easter and Christmas.
Right.
And then Thanksgiving maybe.
Right.
Four holidays. At most. So they begin to understand the dynamics. And that's why studies have shown that, let's say, an average family of four in the United States spends about $7,000 a year on food. The average Orthodox family at the same size of 14 spends over $18,000 on food. So the numbers are totally out of proportion. And they show you the extent of the reach and the extent of the consumer power that the Orthodox market has. So Kosher Fest developed in a very interesting way. It developed in the sense that not only was the quality of the exhibitor improving with time,
mm-hmm.
but the quality of the products was improving. You saw companies that came from Israel. I remember 30 years ago, they came with a cellophane wrapper and very bad graphics. Today, they're very nice boxes and
right.
the very, very modern graphics and very appetizing. I mean, and of course, when you talk about Israel has one advantage over many, many countries in that it has a very much a developed technological food industry. So a lot of the products that you see today that are gluten-free, which is an enormous trend, or sugar-free and things like that, came out of technological advances in Israel. So they have an edge. The presentation of the food in Israel is, in many cases, more European than it is American.
Okay.
We're trying to catch up here in America with presentation. Now, for example, just as an easy mm-hmm. way to know the difference, when you go to an Italian ice cream store and you see the way gelato is done here, and you go to an ice cream store here, there's no comparison. I mean, it's a whole different world. If you go to some of the airport shops like Schiphol in Amsterdam, and you see the way the presentation of food is done there, but we are catching up. I mean, we are. If you look at the kosher restaurant scene.
Right.
I mean, which today numbers in the hundreds, and it's all over the world, because you virtually can't have a Jewish community or a Jewish travel destination
right. without
having a source for kosher food. It's an enormous experience just to have watched, and the how this has changed. I mean, 30 years ago, every booth was pipe and drape.
Right.
Today it's amazing structures. It's almost a Disney World of food in the presentation.
Wow. Is it still 2 days?
It's two days.
Right. That was always one. You know, there's so many. It's so famous, so that people, you know, what one line was, you know, one day I'll go Milchix, one day I'll go Fleishix. You know,
well, and show you, last year we had as one of our guest speakers, we had a senior executive from Google, who was able to project the trends in kosher based on their back office, so to speak, of information
data.
That they had. They had a tremendous amount of data and were able to say, you know, for example, this and this is trending. More and more people are going for this. This is the salad. Kale is now very, very popular. Things like that. The fact that Google recognized the power and how many people actually click on to kosher sites, I think that in itself is a huge testimony to how far that industry has grown.
Wow. The foot traffic, let's say last year as opposed to the early years.
Well, the foot traffic is not an indication because there are very strict limitations on who actually can come to the show.
Gotcha.
It's like in every show that's a trade show. You have to really be a legitimate member of the trade in order to come there. Remember, the real reason that people come there is to make contacts, mm-hmm. and that's what you were talking about, the commerce part of it.
Right.
And also to sell new products. I mean, a lot of new companies, despite the fact that there have been 400 companies every year, and we're in the Meadowlands every year in the same place for the last I don't know how many years, and the reason is because we kind of own the town. We have like 2,000 hotel rooms there. It's a very easy move in and easy move out. The conditions are very...
Newark.
As opposed to New York City, for example. When we were in Javits, it was much more difficult. But the bottom line is that when people come to the show every year, they see things that are new. If you're in the industry, you have to know what's going on. If you're a distributor, if you're a wholesaler, if you're a retailer. And again, what happened... Remember, we went like this during the last 40 years. We went from an industry that was dominated from mom-pops.
Right.
Grocery store, small butcher store.
Right.
So what did the housewife do? The housewife had to get into the car, buy the butcher, go to the fruit store, you know, and then go to the grocery store. It was multiple stops.
Right. Right.
So that was replaced by the supermarket,
right,
which recognized that in their communities they had Orthodox people that wanted kosher products. So they took in kosher products. And they sold kosher products. And what they found, and this is still true today, they found that it was a great gimmick to win over a customer. What do I mean by that? Once you had a kosher customer come in for kosher products, guess what? They shopped the rest of the store.
Right, right. So that's,
you know, so maybe they bought $60 worth of kosher stuff, but then bought $100 worth of general stuff. So they said, hey, this is...
this makes sense.
Why don't we do this? And more and more stores did it, and hundreds of stores today. You know, if you just want to get a number, 18,000 supermarkets in the United States carry matzah before Pesach.
18,000
supermarkets.
We
have... Then we went from the supermarkets, the discount stores bought into it, the Costco's of the world, the Walmart's of the world. You take a store like Walmart in Monticello, does millions of dollars in 10 weeks.
That's right.
In 10 weeks. Then we kind of went back to the kosher stores because the kosher independents, the pomegranates of the world opened up, the evergreens,
the bread berries,
all of those. So we went upscale. And we may have a presentation. And what happened there is that the whole takeout industry developed because these stores, the profit margins were in the takeout divisions because that was where they were able to make money as opposed to the dry or the refrigerated or other things. I mean, I could go through every aisle, what happened in the snack aisle. Dramatic increases.
Please,
in kosher.
Explain. It's fascinating.
The frozen doors. I mean, when you talk about stores that used to have 9, 10, 11 doors, and today are 40 doors, and all kosher.
Yeah, I mean...
Just one after the other. How many frozen brands of frozen pizza do you want?
Yeah, and I was going to say, they have as... The frozen section with the doors are almost as many as a ShopRite or a Pathmark. But meanwhile, it's only... And there isn't pork in there. It's just all
Absolutely.
Kosher.
But I'm fascinated is the amount of excitement that you see at the show, but also... that people travel around the world. They're looking for ideas. They want to come up with new products. There are chefs that are working all the time on new products. There's a dynamics here. This is it's a city that doesn't sleep, the kosher city.
Right.
And I don't think we've at all peaked. I think we're just at the beginning of a tremendous growth. The fact that you have in New York City alone, 25 to 50 new restaurants every year? I mean, okay, restaurants are notorious for opening and closing because every person that opens a restaurant believes that he has the definitive answer to a restaurant. He's going to have the best food. He has the best chef. And no one's going to put him out of business only to find out reality that there are others out there in this competition. But, you know, look at, I'll give you another example. When I started Kosher Fest, there were approximately 8 or 9 kosher cookbooks on the market. Today, there are over 150. Okay, right.
As you know, my background, I worked at Arts World.
Yeah, so you know what happened. So people ask me sometimes, and journalists ask me, they say, well, how do you reconcile the fact that all these restaurants are opening up, and at the same time, all these cookbooks? So are the same people eating out and the same people cooking at home? The answer is yes. Because today, the modern Orthodox woman has become a chef. It's all about presentation. All the magazines, as you know, all the newspapers have food sections in them. I mean, just it's become not a hobby, but it's become part of life. And now you can multiply that. Put dollar signs on that, what people are buying. I know one supermarket guy, he tells me that as soon as a cookbook comes out, he reads it because he wants to make sure that he has every ingredient in the store. Because when the housewife comes there
and looks at the list.
And remember, today they have apps and people are coming iPads. It's a whole different world. And you can't say I don't have that ingredient because then they're out of there. Then you're not the source. So it's a whole world. And we can talk about that because digital marketing now has become, if I have a new product today, it's not what it used to be. Today you go on Instagram and you instantly get thousands of people. You put up a video. And I know I put up for a client a video, 20,000 people saw it within 3 hours. I mean, the instant result and the instant impact of it. But again, substance is very important. It has to be real. It has to be something, again, that will make people better, that they'll appreciate it better, they'll eat better, they'll enjoy it more. Otherwise, it's not marketing.
Menachem, we have so much more to cover and only around 10 minutes left. And it's, every week we do have great guests, but it's really special to have you in studio.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
It's really true. Let's go back to now some good old-fashioned marketing, brass tacks, etc., because your range is really covers all aspects of marketing. Packaging, the difference between a food product, some tips on great food product packaging.
Well, one of the problems that people have when they put up packaging is where is the package going to end up? Now, for example, I have sometimes counseled people to say, if you have a certain product, how is that product going to be stacked? Is it going to be stacked flat? Where is the brand show? Does it show on the side? Does it show on top? So there are some key elements that have to be thought out. I sometimes just take a trip to the supermarket and take a proposed package and put it up to an existing package. Because remember, we're going to be competing against somebody.
That's smart.
The bottom line is that still a majority of shopping today is impulse buying. I mean, people are going to buy as a result of merchandising, of the way the positioning is on the shelf. So it plays a very, very important, color plays a very important thing. It gives people an idea whether something is new or old, something is fresh or not, something that is green, is healthy, whatever. So there's a lot that goes into colors, size, branding. I mean, you want people to know that. Why people ask me, why is branding so important? Because branding means that it's a signature, that you're going to be able to put other things under that. Once people have the trust, once they believe that a Louis Vuitton product is a quality product.
The only
danger with that is that if you bomb on any one item, it can affect the entire brand. So it puts an awesome responsibility on the brander to make sure that they maintain the level, the quality, and the consistency. You know, because sometimes we have a problem with consistency. I used to tell a caterer who sometimes when I went to an affair, he was off the charts.
Okay.
And other times, he was planned.
So.
It was planned. And I said, if you only learn to be consistent, you'd pick up a lot of business. You know, and the same with restaurants. I mean, because the customer is very unforgiving. I mean, if they have a bad experience, it'll take a lot to get them back. So why offer the opportunity for somebody to have a bad experience that is going to end up costing you? So packaging is the one thing that has to be really, really thought out. You need a professional. You really do. I mean, sometimes find young people that say, you know, my daughter is a graphic artist and she knows this and this and that. No problem. The only problem is talk to that daughter and you'll find out that she has no idea about positioning on the shelf. She has no idea what the competition is. She only has an idea what's in her mind, which is great. I mean, I have no problem with that. I love creativity. I would love people to be even more creative. However, when you put serious money into something, there's a responsibility that you get it right.
Absolutely. I once heard you speak about this, the importance that by frozen items or fresh items, I believe you had mentioned not to completely package it, show the item so people could see that it's fresh as opposed to like hiding it in there.
Yeah, I mean, where we're going in the industry, I mean, I get this question all the time, whether the food industry is going to be more online with more people. More people are buying online. But there are certain products. I think a woman still wants to touch the cantaloupe and know how fresh it is. She has a sense. There are certain products and food. Food is a very personal item. It relates very much to the makeup and the being of a person. And so I still believe that no matter what happens in technology and how advanced digital marketing will become, that personal visit to a store is going to remain.
Now, you touched on this before, but and this really goes to the core of what you do. How important is it for a company to be strategic and to speak with a consultant before just jumping in and say, you know, in their mind, I have the greatest product and everyone's going to buy it, and they just run in. But there are others that approach it with a strategy. They deal with a consultant. How important is that?
Well, you know, I'm trying to figure out how I would react if I'm going to be sitting in the back seat of a driverless car. You know, are my nerves going to be shot? Am I going to worry about that?
And we're not that far off.
And that maybe the computer might fail me, etc. Now, it's the same way. It's driving blindly without having a strategic plan. And the worst part about it is, and it pains me, is that people throw away money just by guessing and just by not having the strategic plan and not knowing what they want at the end of the day. I just asked a customer the other day. I said, you have this wonderful product. Are you planning to expand into other similar products? I don't know yet. Now, it's a good answer and a bad answer. A good answer is okay, I'm going to focus on this one product and I'm going to see what happens. Great answer. The bad answer is, what was the idea behind it? What did you want to do? Did you want to create a line of health products? Did you want to, appeal to the gluten-free customer? Where are you marketing this to? And this is sometimes a big question. Is what stores are going? Who is your distributor? Distribution is key because you can market from today till tomorrow if you're not on the shelf.
Yeah,
remember what I said. It's getting on the shelf and getting off the shelf. But if you're not on the shelf, who are you marketing to? I mean, the customer has to be able to say, oh, I like that product, and then go to the store and pick it up. If it's not there, there's a disappointment. There's a level of disappointment, and that happens all the time. As I said before, it's very, very difficult to win back a customer who is disappointed.
Is staying on the subject of retail and supermarkets, perhaps you could share any tips on a great layout. I know that's a general question, but you're certainly capable of
Well, you know, let's make it a little interesting.
Okay.
All right. Did you ever wonder when you walk into a supermarket, the first thing that you hit is the fruits and vegetables?
Right.
So what you do is you're going to put that into the cart, and then you're going to go around and you're going to put in heavy cans and stuff and sodas all on top of the fruits and vegetables.
It dents it. Right. It ruins it.
Does that make sense?
Coming to think of it, it does not make sense.
Okay, but the answer is it makes a lot of sense because when you come into the store, you want to be confronted by the five senses. You want to have smell, so you might have the takeout right away to your right, or you'll have a bakery. You'll smell the bakery right away.
Right.
Color. What more than fruits and vegetables gives you a variety of color than it does?
Beautiful color.
It creates the mindset that I'm hungry and I want good food, true that I'm gonna really as far as stacking it in the cart,
it
doesn't make sense. But this is all about consumer psychology. This is all about consumer behavior. And the behavior, we deal very much with our five senses. We buy because our senses want it. The little kid who's sitting on top of the cart, he's using his senses. He's smelling. He's looking at the color. That's what draws him to reach over and to try to pull a product off the shelf.
Hey, one second. Are we allowed to talk about if you should take your kids along for shopping trips?
Well, you know, that's a question of convenience. If you have a babysitter, you don't. But you know what? Yeah. It's a great experience for a kid to go around. First of all, it's a social experience. They see other people. They learn to behave. Right. It's not a bad experience. The only bad part about it
is the budget.
But the only bad part about it is if there's not enough room in the aisles for these carriages to be there. But I think it's a wonderful experience. I used to take my kids there. And is it hard? Yes, it's hard. But you know what? They remember it. They remember. They'll come back to their memory. I remember sitting on top of that cart and looking at all those products.
Menachem, the time flies, especially with a guest like yourself. In roughly 60 seconds, what would be your final takeaway for the listeners of Mind Your Business?
I think, you know, the name that you have, Mind Your Business, is kind of like planning everything else. When you go out the door in the morning, you pretty much have a plan what you're going to do today. And if you don't, I really sympathize with you. It's the same way. Minding your business means mind. Putting your mind to what your business is. Thinking into what you're doing. But you don't have to be the expert by yourself. You don't have to be the doctor. You can go to a doctor. You can seek out expert advice. And by the way, if you're going to spend money, you owe it to yourself to talk to more than your father-in-law and your wife.
That was Menachem Lubinsky, a founder, CEO, president of Lubicom. Thank you so much for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Wow, that wraps up a great edition. Tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.